Now, from the left coast, another in-depth interview from Peter B. Collins. Peter B.'s been talking about news and politics since Watergate and generously shares his knowledge, wisdom, opinions, and outrage here because his friends and family can't take it anymore. Peter B.'s an independent progressive who upsets Democrats and Republicans as conditions require and is one of the few lefty pundits who predicted Trump would win. This podcast is funded entirely by listeners like you, and subscribers get first access to these in-depth interviews. When you're ready, go to peterbcollins.com/signup. Now, here's your humble host, Peter B. Collins.
Today's podcast is intended for my activist listeners, people who get involved in election campaigns, in movements, and who often contribute to support those efforts. Do you feel you've been getting a good return on your political dollar? Well, Airlift has a new way for you to support causes from the grassroots up. Danny Altman joins me in a minute, and I think you'll find this interesting. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you who support my work with your contributions. People like Andrew Rush, Morgan Weiser, Benny Alto, and Gunnar Gunderson. I appreciate their support, and I'd like to receive yours. Just visit peterbcollins.com, click on Menu, then click on Become a Subscriber. You land on the sign-up page, and it's easy to choose a level of support that's comfortable for you and your budget. Thanks for your support, and thanks for listening.
This is how we do it.
Today on the Peter B. Collins podcast, we're going to take a look at a innovative approach to supporting grassroots organizations across the country. And the goal is political change, long term. Danny Altman joins me here today. He has helped put together a new fundraising campaign system and a website, which is at airlift.fund. Danny, we should tell people that our kids went to grade school together. And I haven't seen you since then, but I'm delighted to hear about this new project and share it with my listeners. So give us the thumbnail. What is the purpose of Airlift?
Well, the simplest way to describe it, Peter, is a Consumer Reports for political giving. People are bombarded with what I call hostage notes. It's kind of goes back to the that famous Mad magazine cover with which says with the headline, "Buy this magazine or we'll shoot this dog."
Yeah.
So it promises disaster if you don't give,
right,
and it promises nirvana if you do give, and you get hundreds of them a day.
Just chip in $3.
Exactly.
And Citizens United will disappear tomorrow.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I get those come-ons all the time.
So it's what I call friendly fire, because it's coming from your own side, and it is really ultimately very discouraging, because it is taking a very emotional approach.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we decided to do was to come up with the antidote for this approach to fundraising, which is something much more calmer, more thoughtful, and the idea is to give people the ability to be more strategic in their political giving.
And so, for example, I can go to Act Blue and I can donate to somebody running for Congress, Senate, or President of the United States. I could also go to the DCCC and just dump money in there and see what they do with it. How does your effort contrast with those?
Well, most political giving is I would call it a waste of money. And number one, it's a black box. You don't really know where the money is going. Number two, most political spending is really controlled by a class of consultants who win whether the candidates win or lose. And the most extreme version of this story is, and I forget the guy's name, but he's a famous Democratic consultant who has been in charge of 7 losing presidential campaigns.
I remember his name. It's Bob Shrum.
There you go. Thank you.
And he is still considered some sort of a legend in the Democratic Party, not in the way you and I would describe it.
Yeah. So and there's actually a lot of evidence that where this money is directed really doesn't work. There's a guy named David Brookman, who's a professor of political science at Stanford, and he's studied the effectiveness of political television and direct mail. Not so much directly, but he's done master's studies of all the other research that's been done. And his conclusion is that the effectiveness of political TV is not zero, but close to zero.
Yeah.
And most people are pretty amazed to hear that because that's where most of the money is going.
Well, Danny, let me confess that I have, from time to time, operated as one of those dreaded political consultants. And I've been on campaign conference calls where I have argued against wasting money. I'll give you a specific example. Michael Allen ran for the state assembly from here in Marin and Sonoma counties. His campaign was managed at that time by the Speaker of the Assembly. And in one of the media buys, they bought a schedule of radio spots during the World Series on a radio station that covers the entire region. And I objected to the waste of this money, and I said, that's like putting up a billboard in Los Angeles for a campaign that's, you know, got a district that's 300 miles away. And I was told to sit down and shut up because they were going to spend the money because the guy who was making the decision liked to listen to the ball game. And he thought that everybody else did. So and in the, you know, major political campaigns, we do see that the consultants, because they get a percentage of the money they spend on television, usually 15%, they steer that where they're going to make the most, not where it really reaches people who are persuadable and who can be, you know, pressured or induced to turn up and actually vote.
Right. There aren't a lot of persuadable people anymore. This is, I think, is a bit of a myth because the country is so polarized that the notion, I mean, I call it like trying to convince, you know, the 14 white suburban voter, you know, people in the suburbs, a tremendous amount of Democratic campaign money goes towards that effort. And what Airlift, the group that I founded, focuses on are people who are called low propensity voters, unlikely voters. There are people who a good way to think about them is that they're people who showed up to vote for Obama in 08. They showed up in 12 to vote for Obama, and in 16 they stayed home. And there are millions of people who fall into that category, and many millions more who are eligible to vote but not registered to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And what Airlift is all about is supporting groups who understand how to activate those people.
Now, this came out of the so-called resistance, right? You're a member of Mill Valley Community Action Network, MVCAN. And I have to say, when I first heard the organization was starting, I was excited. And then I grew concerned, Danny, because I thought that it was going to be steering the energy of these activists too much into the Democratic Party. And I'm I don't know if you knew who Tim Carpenter was. He founded Progressive Democrats of America. And he articulated an inside-outside strategy that, yes, the Democrats are the only available option to direct progressive activism, but they have to be forced to do it. And it requires this, at times, an insider strategy where you support, you know, specific campaigns or candidates, and other times where you work from the outside as an agitator to pressure the party to move in a desired direction. For me, that's leftward. And so I see what you're talking about as consistent with what Carpenter called his inside-outside strategy.
I think it's very consistent. And so the way that we think about it is top-down versus bottom-up, that the Obama campaign was top-down but used very effective organizing techniques and got a lot of people excited. The Hillary campaign, top-down, at this conference that I attended, which was kind of the germination of the airlift idea, someone was speaking who talked about what it was like to work on the Hillary campaign. And they said that the problem was that if you were working in the field, there was no way to get a message up to the top. They did not want to hear it. And that's a terrible thing. And
yeah, so, like, come to Wisconsin.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly.
It's wonderful this time of year.
Right.
We've got beer.
Yeah. Yeah. So the all of the groups that we support they're issue driven groups, and so they're helping people to fight for issues that they really care about. And so number one, it's a way to like really connect with people. It doesn't have anything to do with an abstract version of politics. It's very local, and it's very connected to anything from health care to criminal justice, but in very, very specific ways. For example, the group that we support in Virginia, and we support a very limited palette of groups. That's why we say it's kind of Consumer Reports for political giving. So right now we're supporting a total of 17 groups across the country.
Mm-hmm.
So this group that we support in Virginia fought for 5 years, five legislative sessions, to get Medicaid expansion passed in Virginia. And when we almost won control of the House of Delegates in 2017, there were a few Republicans who were scared, and they were able to push that over the line. And the result is that 400,000 Virginians now have access to medical care. So these are like simple, dramatic things that people understand. It's not abstract. And a few weeks ago, what they were able to accomplish was to push something else across the line, also in Virginia. There are 627,000 people in Virginia who have lost their driver's licenses because they can't afford court costs.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of basically civil matters that wind up being dealt with in criminal courts or in a criminal fashion. And so as of July 1st of this year, those 627,000 people are getting back their driver's licenses. Just think about the impact that this has on people's lives.
So, Danny, tell me if I'm reading your goals and methods correctly here, because I'm now fairly skeptical of just jumping on a candidate bandwagon and hoping that that person will actually produce the kind of change that I'm seeking. And I believe that movements that locally organized, close to the ground community organizations are where we are going to find the political power, the votes that we need to turn out that have not been reliable in the past, and future candidates. Because one of the weaknesses of the Democratic Party is the way they've been recruiting people who were Republicans 10 minutes ago, Harley Ruda in Orange County. Now, I'm glad he knocked off a longtime incumbent Republican. But I have concerns about what he's going to deliver in order to hold on to his seat in a clear purple area. And so you've got some efforts underway in Orange County. Share that with our listeners and how this is a long-term investment, right, instead of just looking to the next election point.
So we're working with a group in Orange County. It's called the Orange County Civic Engagement Table. So they're working with faith-based groups, they're working with Vietnamese groups, they're working with Korean groups. Now, these are groups that are all of their literature is in the native languages. There's a group called the Korean Resource Center that helps people with immigration problems, education problems, tax problems. So it's essentially a service organization. And if you think about the potential for, like, the relationships that happen over the course of a year as opposed to a political system where a lot of money and a lot of people from outside flood into an area just before an election, make a lot of noise, and then fold up the tent and disappear. It's like that's really that's really the difference that's making things possible.
Well, so and this has been the weakness of the Democratic Party. They get organized and suit up just before an election, and afterward they say, oh, well, we did our part. And, you know, after the 2018 midterms, there is, you know, certain satisfaction. But the Republicans never stop. They suit up for combat every damn day, whether the election is around the corner or not. And this has been a systemic weakness on the left.
Well, the Republicans have taken the long view. So you've got the Federalist Society and, like, plans hatched long time ago to take over the judiciary. You've got groups like ALEC, which have, like, determined the agenda for state legislatures. Mm-hmm. You've got Grover Norquist, who's, like, been pounding on, like, you know, no taxes or there isn't such a thing as a good tax. And so this has been a really systemic work that's been happening for decades. And I think the Democrats, it's kind of a love-hate thing, I think, a lot of people. Because our goal is ultimately right now is to get people to go into voting booths and to vote for Democrats. But they're only voting for Democrats because those are the people who are most likely to be carrying water for the issues that the people really care about. If there were other people who were doing it, then they perhaps would be voting for those people. So that's why there is not, like, a real alignment with the Democratic Party. In some places, the party is stronger than others. But you look at a state like Pennsylvania, which is a new state that we have two groups that we're working with there. If you look at county Democratic parties in Pennsylvania, 2/3 of the seats are empty. So that gives you a sense of, like, the strength, you know, mm-hmm. the strength of the party.
Yeah.
It's strong in Pittsburgh. It's strong in Philadelphia, and then falls off very quickly.
Joe Sestak, who served in Congress from Pennsylvania, yeah. ran twice unsuccessfully for the U.S. Senate. Was screwed by Arlen Specter when Obama endorsed Specter over Joe Sestak. He once described Pennsylvania to me, and it's similar to what you said. He just had one addition. He said, we've got Pittsburgh and we've got Philadelphia, and in between, it's Mississippi.
Yeah, the version I heard was Pennsyltucky.
Okay.
And one of my kids went to school there, and I sort of know a little about it. And we've gotten – one of the things that we do at Airlift is we have connections to some amazing – people who understand what's happening all over the country, both mm-hmm. in a political sense and in a movement sense. And so we had a crash course on Pennsylvania politics from a wonderful person who had pretty strong roots in the SIEU there. And the difference between that story and what these people are now saying is that there are many cities in Pennsylvania where there are close to majority minority populations. So you've got really strong minority populations, Hispanic and Black. You've got places like Delaware County where people are being forced out of Philadelphia because of high rents. So you've got counties that are, like, now increasingly Democratic, you mm-hmm. know, targets or hopeful areas. Mm-hmm. So what the strategy that the groups we're working with are taking is to take the success of Lancaster Stands Up, where they really proved that you can mobilize people in a way that was really unheard of in the non-Pittsburgh, Philadelphia parts of Pennsylvania, and to try to replicate that strategy in some of these in some of these smaller cities.
Mm-hmm. And Danny, to what extent do you see a nexus politically between activists who are energized by the challenge of climate change and those who are focused a little more on social justice? Because I believe before he went to the White House, Van Jones, who was working at the Ella Baker Center in Oakland, developed a really smart plan for a new green economy, which addressed social inequities as part of the entire package. And I see that as a viable coalition. Are you finding that on the ground?
Yes. Yeah. It's definitely, I'd say, not as compartmentalized as people think. There's an amazing group called the Environmental Voter Project that's run by a guy named Nathaniel Stinnett out of Boston. And what they've discovered is that an environmental voter is as likely to be a Latino grandmother in Los Angeles as a Birkenstock wearing Colorado activist, because a lot of environmentalists this is the amazing thing that he's turned up, a lot of environmentalists don't vote.
Really?
Yes. A lot of people who if you ask them what their top one or two issues are, and if it's the environment or climate change, a lot of those people do not vote. And so he's kind of set that's kind of the task that they've taken on.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of sensitivity among Black and Latino groups, a lot of understanding that these are the communities that are living next to the smokestacks and the bad chemicals, and an understanding that as climate change happens, these communities are going to be like affected more than everyone else.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the website. It's airlift.fund. That's an unusual extension on your URL.
Yes.
But once you note it, it's probably easier to remember. So airlift.fund.
Yeah.
And if somebody visits there, how would you suggest they navigate the site to determine where they find a match for their interests and their desire to contribute?
Well, we made it as simple as we could, but it's still a little complicated. And so there are like two layers to this site. The first layer explains the basic idea, and we do that pretty quickly. And then we tell people about the there's a button that you can press that says donate across all funds, and we found that about 80% of people press that button, which is really very gratifying for us, because there's a sense that we're actually doing something very different, and that we're doing it in a kind of conscientious, very transparent way. And so that's an article of faith to hit that top button. Then if they go down a little bit, we describe the three funds that we have, and it's basically an investment, you might say, mutual fund kind of model. And the idea is that you're actually investing in work that is going somewhere and is going to like stick around and like builds on each wave of work and energy. We have three funds. One fund is called Voter Motor, which is a play on motor voter, which is very interesting, because we were Airlift was you could say incubated by a group called the Movement Voter Project, and the guy who was the most active in terms of helping us at the beginning, his name is Matt Singer, and he's only around 40 years old, but he's like the father of the automatic voter registration movement. And so there are now 15 states across the country where voter registration is tied to either the DMV or other government databases. California is one of those states, and it's one of the reasons why we have such a high percentage of people registered to vote. So
and then the third is the Midwest.
Yeah. So then there's a fund called Lift the Midwest, and mm-hmm. this was started out as something that we do called a special project, which is a little bit more of a short fuse kind of special attention kind of situation. And our advisors told us that they thought that the Midwest was like really under-resourced, and that there were some amazing new groups in the Midwest. And we took a look at that. We had a lot of discussions. We interviewed the people who run these groups, and we decided to create a fund called Lift the Midwest. And that fund supported groups in five different Midwestern states. And then that has morphed into something a little bit different, because we've decided to apply some top-down thinking to the basic bottom-up strategy, which is there are five critical states for winning back the presidency. So the logic is, well, let's support grassroots groups who are mm-hmm. working in those states, and they're working while this incredible circus of a Democratic primary is going on. So nobody is thinking about what's actually happening on the ground in those states, which are Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Florida, and Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
We were in all of those states before except for Pennsylvania. So we now have two grassroots groups that we're supporting in each one of those states.
And Danny, one of my issues is election integrity. We hear a lot of phony commentary about voter fraud when, in fact, we have massive election fraud. It really is most obvious in North Carolina in the 2018 midterms, but that is not isolated. In situations where, just like Georgia, where the Secretary of State presided over his own election for governor and openly suppressed African-American votes, absentee ballot applications that had been collected by his opponent, Stacey Abrams, and her allies. And that was an election theft in broad daylight. And while, you know, the media covers it a little, we basically get crickets from Democratic leaders. They have personally told me, Peter, we don't like to talk about election issues because, after all, I got elected. And that suggests that somehow I'm part of a criminal conspiracy. And also they believe that talking about the suppression of voting rights will suppress turnout. And I'm saying, wait a minute. You've got to address these issues, because a lot of people are staying home because they're saying there's fraud. They're not going to count my vote. They're going to give me a provisional ballot. I'm not going to bother.
Yeah.
And so I just believe on election integrity issues, the Democrats are so flat-footed. And we need to – this is where the outsider strategy needs to address those issues.
Yeah. One of the groups we support is called Organize Florida. So they were one of the prime groups in fighting for the Second Chances Amendment 4 in Florida, which passed by 64% of the vote. The threshold mm-hmm. was 60%. So it's
that restored the voting rights of ex-felons.
Yes. And mm-hmm. It's interesting to note what a felon is. In Florida, you're a felon if you're caught driving without on an expired driver's license.
Really?
In Florida, you're a felon if you catch a lobster that's got a tail too long. So all of this history of laws goes back to the Jim Crow era, where they wanted to make it difficult for black people to participate in public life. So lay low. And you know, don't go out, don't go fishing, I mean, whatever it is. And mm-hmm. so, because I think when people think, when you hear the term ex-felon, you think somebody who, like, you know,
robbed a bank.
Yeah, did something violent, mm-hmm. you know, and so forth. And it's.
Yeah, because in California, the definition of a felony is that it draws a state prison term. And that technically is a year or longer before the realignment that took place recently.
Okay.
So the term does vary. Yeah. The definition varies yeah. from one jurisdiction to another.
Yeah. So the prospect that 1.4 million people in Florida can get their vote back is incredible. I think it's important to note that this movement was started by a guy named Desmond Meade, who is an ex-felon who managed to get a law degree, was living out of his car for quite a period of time, contemplating suicide because his future. He just didn't see a clear path. Mm-hmm. And he's the guy who's the driving force behind this this movement. In a kind of similar but lighter weight way, I mean, I think it was in Missouri where some guy on Facebook said, how come we have like such a how come we don't have a better system for determining voter, districting and voting rights in Missouri, and that resulted in this proposition called Clean Missouri, which, which passed, which is going to, like, revolutionize the way voting, the districts are apportioned, mm-hmm. and voting takes place. So these ballot measures are incredibly popular and important. And same thing in Nevada. They passed automatic voter registration there. I think one other state this last cycle. So people are very sensitive to this issue. And the state legislatures, if they're Republican-controlled, try to, like, roll things back. And then, it's like – so it's – I think this strategy is overwhelming force, that's how you deal with this. You get enough people behind an idea and ready to fight for it, and that's – that's how you overcome some of these restrictions.
Mm-hmm. Well, Danny, I'm really intrigued, and I want to thank you for sharing Airlift with my listeners. Is your desire to get people to make regular contributions, say $5 a month, or are you looking for bigger ticket donations? Is there a strategy, or is it just whatever people can handle?
Yeah, it's a mix. Act Blue is an amazing platform because you can give us $100,000, or you can give us $5. The platform can handle it.
So they even accepted my $1 contributions that I'm using to help buy positions in the debates for candidates who I think have something to say.
I love it. I've
invested $5 so far.
Good. So it's a lot of candidates are looking for, like, grassroots has, like, kind of become like a real term of endearment, particularly for particularly for Democrats. And so a lot of the candidates are referring to their campaigns. Beto O'Rourke would be like a classic example as grassroots campaigns because they had a lot of people involved who weren't involved before. They got a lot of small dollar contributions. The problem is that you're giving money to, or you're basically betting on the horses. And if you give money to a candidate, if they lose, you lost all your money because there is nothing that lasts after that.
Yeah.
And if they won, you won or lose depending on whether or not the candidate delivers on the things that they promised. And, that's a tough problem. So that's why we're just trying to get people to shift their thinking. I mean, it's mm-hmm. like giving money to candidates is like, we all want to bet on a horse, and it's like 99% of the media we're exposed to is like all these bright, shiny objects, and it's like this is where the action is.
Yeah.
And we're saying, well, no, it's not really true. There's a parallel universe where there's actually a lot of hard work and just foundational things that are happening that affect whoever is going to be elected.
And my final question, Danny, are you as offended as I am by the pronouncement from Sherry Bustos, the congresswoman who heads the DCCC, that they are going to deny business to political consultants who help challengers in Democratic primaries? And I just find this fundamentally undemocratic. And the idea – I do understand the DCCC is about reelecting incumbents. That's the purpose of that organization. But I think that they are failing in the optics to lay out this rule after the energy that brought people like AOC to Congress and that flipped Orange County in a dramatic way. And to, basically in this top-down decree, try to stamp out challengers to incumbent Democrats in 2020. I just think it's deeply offensive, and it's one of the reasons I won't donate to either the DCCC or to most Democratic candidates.
I don't think it's about optics. I think it's about fundamentally who they are, and it's about holding on to power. There was a story in the Times about a year ago that said that the of the first $200 million, I think, that the DNC had raised, $0 went to black or Hispanic-led organizations. I got a hold of the contract that the DCCC makes a candidate sign. That contract says that at least 75% of your budget needs to go to paid media. Here is your list of approved vendors. You will select vendors from this list. This is not a Democratic small d organization making those kinds of demands.
And I think Airlift offers people a real alternative.
Thanks, Peter.
Thank you, Danny. Great to see you. Thanks for listening to my in-depth interview with Danny Altman. Send me your comments, peter@peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.